You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
And here we are with number 13 on the top 25, under 25, smack in the middle of this plateau. Unfortunately, or fortunately in some case, and unfortunately in other cases, is that the planned guest could not participate due to contract reasons. The backup guest couldn't participate because of work and ice hockey related work. That means that, sorry, Jared, you're like the third stringer here now.
Yeah, I think the apology should go to the listeners, not to me. Although being the third choice is a little bit of a blow, but it's okay. I'll handle that.
Yeah, I mean, it, you were beaten by two very competent guests, and you're a competent guest yourself, especially with in regards to Rafael Javi Pinard, who's number 12 on the list. First and foremost, Jared, you've been with this site for a year longer than I have, I think. Have you ever seen a plateau like this, where five players are within less than a point on the average in total?
No, and especially not this high up in the rankings. Like, usually, you know, once you get to like in the 30s and 40s and even the low 20s, sometimes it can be very close. We've seen ties, you know, in the past as well. But yeah, to have it this high up is just an indication of how close these prospects are, how well regarded they are, and how, I don't want to say how meaningless the order is, but it kind of is meaningless, because once you get to a certain point, you know, even in the entire top 25, even below that, the order is just kind of, yeah, you know, I might have had one guy in front of another guy or behind another guy, but I mean, I can't argue with it, really. You know, they're all really good players, and it's a good year for this exercise, and I think that part of the challenge of this year is that there are so many players who have not even played professionally in North America, and that just complicates everything, because we're comparing apples to oranges so much throughout this entire process, and it's really hard to compare. Luckily, a lot of these players are going to be playing in Laval this coming season. I don't think the player we're talking about today will be, though.
The thing is, though, first and foremost, I'm looking at it when I see the list and go through everything, and I see a plateau like this, I'm just happy I hit the plateau with sort of the same five picks. That's where I'm happy about. The order, as you mentioned, is secondary in that regard. But also, Rafael Harvey Pinard can go to Laval without having to go through waivers, right?
Yeah.
And at one point or another, the management will look at that. So saying he won't be in Laval, yeah, I'm second guessing that a bit, and we'll see here around Christmas who's right or not. But that's fine. Rafael Javi Pinado, fantastic season last year. Got half a season with the AHL and half a season more or less with the NHL team, and what a season that was. On top of it was a little bit of a 20, almost 25% shooting percentage.
Yeah, look, let's tackle the elephant in the room right away. He's not going to score at a 34 goal pace in the NHL his entire career. That's not the type of player he is. Let's just throw that out there right away. I'd be very surprised if he continues scoring at the pace he scored on. You mentioned the shooting percentage as well. I'd be very surprised about that. Having said that, I think that his shooting percentage can be higher than the average, just because of where he shoots it from. I think a majority of his goals came from within, you know, five feet of the goal crease. So I do think that, you know, he might trend a little bit higher. It reminds me a little bit of Paul Byron. Remember, you know, Paul Byron is always hovering around 20%. And I think he said the media asked him about that. He's like, what do you want me to do? Shoot and miss more? How do you, how do I, how do I make you believe that that's just who I am, kind of thing. So,
There are two
yeah.
things with this though. And first and foremost, the average shooting percentage in NHL is around 10% for everyone, including defenders. So educated guess here, and I'm not going to do the math or anything, around 12.5% for forwards. Realistically, even if you drop him down to 14, 15, he will still be money in the back. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's not a good player. I'm just saying I don't think he's going to be scoring 30 goals in the NHL over a season. But no, I mean, even if he puts in 15, 20 goals, that's you're laughing. You're laughing with that.
Yeah. And second, if you look trying to put together a roster of the Canadiens right now, he's not going to be on the same line as he was last year. So he's going to play with, and I'm using quotation marks here. I'm sorry you can't see them all, listeners, but he's going to play with worse players, which means that he's probably not going to be shooting from the same home plate area again, as much at
Yeah,
least.
I don't think he'll be glued to Nick Suzuki's wing like he was. But having said that, he might be, especially if they decide to, separate Suzuki and Caulfield, which is a possibility. I think that he's a guy that can fit in there. I think his strength is really his versatility, and he can play with Nick Suzuki. But he started his insane run playing with Alex Belzile and Michael Pezzetta. Right, remember that on the fourth line, so he can score even with quote unquote worse players. I mean, I don't think it's that much of a stretch to say that Alex Belzile and Michael Pezzetta are worse than Nick Suzuki. I don't think that anybody's going to get angry at me for saying that, even Alex Belzile and Michael Pezzetta. But having said that, I mean, he's a guy that can produce no matter who he's playing with, right? Like, his run really started with those two players on the fourth line as well. So I think that there's an argument for that, absolutely, but I don't think that it lowers his value. In some cases, it might even increase it because he can play with Nick Suzuki. He can play with Kirby Dach. He can play with Sean Monahan. He can play with Jake Evans. You can put up Christian Dvorak. You can put him with anybody and he'll fit in. Is he a guy that you want to have on your top line all the time? Probably not, but if you're going for, a top nine approach, he can bring something that maybe some of the others might not bring. You look at the line of Thomas Tatar, Philip Deneau, and Brendan Gallagher, and those three, I don't think anybody would necessarily say they were top line players, but together they were a top line and one of the best lines in hockey. For two seasons. And I think that if you look at those three players, Harvey Pinard can play that kind of Gallagher role where he's going to the net, where he's picking up loose pucks, winning battles, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, he's probably not going to play with Nick Suzuki, but I don't think that it makes it as a huge factor because I think he can score, 10 to 20 goals even on a fourth line.
One thing we have to point out here is also the fact that Black61 had a great comment in the Elias Andersson article for the top 25 under 25, where he points out that Andersson has a career 0.76 points per game in the AHL versus Rafael Havispinat 0.74, which is, those are minute differences, so it doesn't really matter in that gray. The interesting thing, though, is that I always come back to this comment from our old colleague Jack Han that said, "You put players in a surrounding where they can succeed." And it seems in this case in NHL, Elias Andersson hasn't been placed in that surroundings, whereas in a way, Raphael Harvey-Pinard managed to force that development and being put around Suzuki, albeit also because of injuries.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because they're completely different players, right? Like
Yeah.
Elias Andersson and Raphael Harvey-Pinard are completely different players, but they produce kind of similarly in the AHL, like you mentioned. And it's at a certain point, it's all about Yes, opportunity, that's a huge factor. If Elias Andersson was playing next to Nick Suzuki last year in the NHL, he probably would have scored more than he has scored in the NHL to this point. But I think there's also something to be said about that versatility, right? And I think that Elias Andersson is kind of growing into that a little bit, where he is able to play in the bottom six and play with players and be that kind of offensive kind of two-way threat a little bit, where he's not completely useless defensively, and his skill plays when he's lower down in the lineup too, right? So I think that there's, versatility for players is huge. Like, if you're not a star player, you have to be versatile. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, that's just, you have to be able to play both ends of the ice, because that's how coaches trust you and put you in positions to succeed, right? If Raphael Harvey-Pinard was not playing well defensively with Pezzetta and Belzil, and they were getting buried every night, there's no way he plays with Suzuki, right? They find somebody else to play that role. So yes, injury is an opportunity to play the role, but I think that there's something to be said about putting yourself in a position where the coach looks at the lineup sheet and be like, oh man, who do I put here? And if your name comes to that top of that list, that's a testament to you as well, right? And you
need to make sure you grab that chance with both hands as well.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a little bit of a difference with Andersson as well, especially in his time with the Rangers, because when you're a high pick, people don't want to put you on the fourth line or the third line, right? You're there to score. When you're the seventh overall pick like he was, you're there to score. And so it's a little bit easier.
He still got the third line treatment though. So
yes, of course. But the long term thing, you can look at Alexis Lafreniere and Kaapo Kakko, the same thing with the Rangers, where it's like, okay, why aren't you scoring more now? Right?
Are we not talking about the Rangers development strategy here, rather than failure of Lafreniere, Kakko, and Andersson, and Kravtsov, if you want to add that one in there as well, but we shouldn't end up there, but it is a little bit of that kind of,
yeah,
at one point or another you have to look at the other end of the equation. Raphael, the archangel in the Bible, announcing the rebuild, that it's finished or that it's going according to plan?
I think that it's going according to plan, right? Like, the whole mantra of a lot of Raphael Harvey-Pinard's development is because of Raphael Harvey-Pinard, right? Like it's kind of similar to Michael Pezzetta, where he's just a guy who tries hard and is always going to give you that 110%. And when you get that kind of consistent effort, it makes you an option, right? And I think that this is what the Canadians are looking for with their new development team, and is trying to get these guys to hit their maximum potential. Getting 14 goals from a seventh round pick is very, very good value.
Even if he doesn't do anything more in the NHL, you already got a value out of him.
Exactly. He's already exceeded expectations for his draft spot, right? Like, they're playing with house money at this point, similar to Jake Evans, right? Like, if that's who Jake Evans stays at the NHL level, then that's perfectly fine. You've already exceeded expectations. But I think that, especially because he was drafted a little bit later, it's interesting to see this continued growth, right? Because he's still one of the older players on this list. He's 24. It's his last year in the ranking. And I think that when that happens, it's kind of an ability to show, like, what is his potential, right? Like, a lot of people see 24-year-olds, but okay, that's who he is. But when you improve every single year, and you're still under 30, you still kind of feel like, okay, maybe there's a little bit more here. And it's very interesting to me to see what he will do this year. Yes, you mentioned it before about the waiver situation, but, Nick Suzuki was eligible to go to the AHL foot waivers, and he always had a spot in the NHL.
We had also a worse team back then, Carrick.
Yeah, for sure. But I think that part of the reason this team is better is because of players like Harvey-Pinard as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you might want to play some of the old guard and try to trade them
Yeah,
at the deadline.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
That's asset management as well.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
What is interesting, though, is you mentioned this thing of getting better. And sometimes I wonder if the seventh round pick or the non-pick or later round picks are putting more effort in. I've heard from sources, and I'm not going to reveal them, but they're confirmed that he's worked on his power skating this summer in order to be able to stay up. He's worked on his core in order to have better balance, in order to get a better center of gravity and thereby be better to play against NHL players. So even with the success that he's had in the NHL already, he's looking on how can he improve to consolidate that success and consolidate that role that he has with the team.
That you're just explaining why he continues to exceed expectations.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's just, you know, a lot of players would go into this offseason feeling like, okay, I have a spot in the NHL and, you know, I should be in the NHL and I don't have to do anything differently. And he's coming in and he's like, no, I need to get better. I want to, you know, and maybe we're looking at, you know, next year we're talking about the Canadians and we're talking about how Rafael and Harvey Pinard and Nick Suzuki are can't be separated, and that's just the way it is. And you know, who knows, but yeah, I think that, you know, the ability to analyze your own game and look for ways that you can improve, whether it's because a coach tells you you can do it, or gives you guidance, or whether it's, you know, Adam Nicklaus telling you that you can do it, and that's an opportunity for you, or whether you just look at it yourself and be like, you know, I can be better in this. I want to be a few steps faster. You know, I look at the guy next to me in the room, and you know, he gets more speed in his first three steps. And you know, why is that? You know, can I improve that with my technique? Being able to do that is just absolutely unbelievable, right? Like, you know, it's kind of similar to, like, you know, people, you know, Connor McDavid has a skills coach, right? If Connor McDavid has a skills coach and feels like he can improve, can't we all? like you know, like it just strikes me as when you have that kind of gene or that you're wired in that way. I mean, that's why these guys are in the NHL and other players who might be more talented are not. And I think that goes a long way. And yes, absolutely. There are players who, you know, become first round picks and feel that they don't have to work and they never reach their potential. And then you have players like Rafael Harvey Pinard, who goes undrafted twice, drafted in his last year in eligibility, and continues to get better and surpasses players who are picked ahead of them. And it happens all the time. And I think that's something that the Canadians are targeting in players, right? Like you listen.
We talk about character, or Canadians, yeah, talk about character. This is part of that.
Absolutely.
Character, yeah. Issue or issue, strength or whatever, mm-hmm, word we're going to use. But you guys know what we mean.
Yeah.
And I think that is, you look for these. We know how much extra work Arturo Lehkonen put in at Frölunda, even if it was Frölunda paying for that, you know, skills coach that he used there for his skating. Same with Jesse Ylönen at home, and so on and so on. But I find it more, well, we have Adam Nicklaus now, but I find it more interesting that not more teams work closer maybe with a skills coach and a skating coach and, you know, a shooting coach. And these are things that are outside the cap that you can enhance your team with. We see it. Poulin is there doing her job as well as a skills coach. I think you're going to see this department is one of those departments that will grow in the bigger NHL clubs because they can afford it, and long term, it will benefit them so much more.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, there's two things, you know, more than two things, but there's two main things that are growing in the NHL. One of them is analytics. And you see those departments growing throughout the league, including Montreal, who has, you know, three people dedicated to that role, plus, you know, other people who slant that side, like John Sedgwick and things like that. And the other is player development. And that's one of the legacies I think that Kyle Dubas is going to have in Toronto. And, you know, he was really one of the first teams to focus on skills training. You know, they brought in guys like, you mentioned Jack before. He was more maybe analytics slanted, but also in skills development and hockey development. They had Adam Nicholas come into the camps and work with them as well. And then, you know, the Canadians are, you know, brought him in as the kind of their full-time hockey development coach. And then he brings in people like, you know, Scott Pellerin and Marie-Philippe Poulin. And I think that, yeah, absolutely. That's a way to ensure your players can improve and continually improve. And you mentioned the character quality of wanting to improve. And, you know, you look at the draft picks from the last 2 years that the Canadians have made under Kent Hughes and Nick Bobrov. And they have that coming out of their ears, right? Juraj Slafkovský, Philip Mechar, Lane Hudson, Owen Beck, Vincent Rohrer, David Reinbacher, all of these guys, Adam Engstrom as well, all of these guys have this quality to continually improve themselves. And, you know, I think that there's a needle thread. Cedric Gaindon, same thing. You talk to any of these players and they're all wired in that way of, I want to get better. And I think that that's something that is so important when you look at these players, because you're not drafting finished products. And I think that when you get to a point where you develop and you continue to push that growth and these players want to improve, you know, just look at the way Juraj Slafkovský has been training this summer as well, right? Anybody can get better. And I think, you know, turning this back to Raphael Harvey-Pinard, is that's how you get seventh round picks to the NHL. Is getting guys who want to improve, who can improve, and who continually want to work harder than anybody else. And if you ask anybody who has watched Raphael Harvey-Pinard play, whether it's in the queue, whether it's in U16, whether it's in the AHL, whether it's in the NHL, he just wants it more. And I think that there's, you know, wanting it more is not going to make you better than anyone else, but it can make you better than other people. And I think that that's a quality that if you look at throughout this top 25 under 25 comes in abundance, and that's the new character. And, you know, Mark Bergevin was big on talking about character, but not really defining it. And I feel like if you look at what Kent Hughes, Jeff Gorton and Nick Bobrov have done since taking over, is that they have really defined it, because you can see it, what that means to them. And I think that, you know, there's no, even though Harvey-Pinard came in before the new organization, I don't think there might not be a better player to show what they can do and what they mean by that than Harvey-Pinard.
Yet.
Right. There are going to be others too.
Yeah. Going back though to Raphael Harvey-Pinard, expectations for next season. We mentioned it, that we are talking about he could go to the AHL, especially with the kind of old timer still on the team and losing players for nothing. Realistically, what should we expect from the team and from Raphael Harvey-Pinard?
I would expect, you know, even if there is a split, and I'm not sure there will be, but obviously it's a numbers game. But if he stays healthy, I would expect more than 34 NHL games this year, which is what he played last year. I would probably expect less than 40 AHL games, which is what he played last year. And I just think that even though he's one of the players that can go down, I just think he's a guy you want to keep around. But he also needs to play.
You cannot just have him in the stands.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that there's other players that won't play instead of him. Like if you look at the team right now, and clearing the space with Pitlick and Mike Hoffman was significant. It shows me that, you know, they want to give chances to guys like Harvey Pinard and Esa Ylönen, and that's who they're clearing the space for. Right. And then you have guys like Michael Pezzetta who would need waivers and guys like that. But I think that, you know, Pezzetta might be somebody that you put into more of a rotation role because you want Harvey Pinard to play. And you know, there's a lot of factors here in terms of, you know, injuries. And if they stay healthy, then yeah, there's a numbers problem. But given what we know about this team, they won't stay healthy. And I don't expect them to be as hurt as they were in the last 2 years. They've changed that department as well, obviously. But I think that he's a player that will be in the NHL by the end of the season. And I think that he's a player that will have his spot. And I think that in camp, he'll be given every opportunity, especially as the teams are split and things like that. But yeah, my expectations is that he solidifies what we saw last year. I don't think he's going to score at a 34 goal pace. That's
or shoot 24.1%.
Yeah, right. I think those are going to go down. You know, even if it goes down to like, you know, 15, 16, 17%, I still think that that's what's, you know, that's probably what's going to happen. But I think that he's a player that, you know, I think, you know, you mentioned all the factors playing against him in terms of, you know, waiver eligibility and a lot of NHL contracts, you know, at forward and things like that. But I think that when everything is put, when push comes to shove and Martin St. Louis looks at his lineup, I think that sending the message of having a guy like Harvey Pinard in your lineup every night is worth more than having somebody else there, you know, whether it's to increase their trade value or things like that. And I know the factors playing against him, but there have been factors playing against Raphael Harvey Pinard since he started playing hockey, and they've never stopped. So I think that he's a member of this organization that is so important for a lot of reasons, and one of them is just to because he always tries, and Michael Pezzetta is the same way. He just always gives it all, and I think that that's something that when you look at your lineup, you make room for a guy like that. And, you know, maybe it's impossible. Maybe he has to start in the AHL. Everyone's healthy. Everyone has impressed. There's nobody you can take out. Maybe he does start the season there. But, you know, I don't see him ending the season there. And I think that at the end of the day, he'll end up playing more than 34 NHL games this year, as long as he's healthy.
And there you have it. You've been listening to Patrick Bexell and Jared Book. Thank you so much for listening. This was number 13 at the top 25, under 25. We're back tomorrow with number 12. And you can all guess who that is. Thank you so much.